the way that he viewed me was so starkly different than the way that I viewed myself. And then in viewing the photos, me seeing them from someone else's vantage point, because we so often just look in the mirror at our faces and look in the mirror of our, how often are we looking at the mirror when we're laughing and we're telling the best part of the joke or the juiciest part of this dirty story? Or how often are we actually experiencing the way we are experienced by other people? Never. You're doing makeup and doing whatever. And so when I was actually able to see a different perspective of myself through the boudoir photography, I was like, okay, maybe I'm not like a little green troll. Maybe I'm like, I'm okay.
I've seen him. You look great.
But I had to.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the podcast. My name is Kara Burrell. Sometimes I go by Nuance Ho, and sometimes I'm just a girl who spent 30 years in Mormonism and likes to talk about all of the things that I've learned and deconstructed, including how to like sex and how to have better sex. And I brought on one of my very good friends, Faith Erickson. Welcome. Hey,
thank you for having me.
So Faith and I first met doing a Mormon Stories episode, basically. She was interviewed as part of Margie Dillon's Thrive series about an area of somebody's life that they felt like, you know, you were really thriving in and you'd come a long way and learned a lot. And it was all about reclaiming your sexuality. We're going to honestly cast as wide of a net as possible so that this episode is just basically for everyone, even though you and I are both two people that have deconstructed the Mormon church or no longer believing.
Anyone who's open to it. Yeah.
Why it's so hard to talk about sex. How do I like sex? How do I sex?
Yes.
And it feels like the question of our species, does it not?
It is exactly the question that we're all asking.
Yeah. And really, spoiler alert, it's going to be about how Faith gave herself permission to live out the fullness of her sexuality. So these types of discussions are my favorite of all time. Let me just make sure that everyone knows. Faith is a good friend of mine, and she's such an amazing articulator of these things. You guys are in for a treat. And just also want to let you guys know that I love having conversations. I love meeting people. I started a 501c3 nonprofit, the Nuance Hug Foundation, a couple months ago. I'm going to be doing all kinds of podcasts and things throughout hopefully the rest of my life. And building community is important to me. So I'm doing a Greece trip, doing a post-Mormon group trip to Athens and Santorini, August 26th through the 1st. So I will leave the links down below. You can look at the itinerary. Please sign up. If you have any other questions, you can email me, comment, and we're going to go have some fun in Greece. So just letting people know your girl wants to go take you on a yacht and talk about all of the things that are important for new community, friendship building, and just have a really good time eating some gyros in Greece with you. Also, if you enjoy hearing me talk about reclaiming sexuality, you're in luck because Natasha Helfer, who I've had on my podcast many times before, Natasha Helfer, who is like the best sex therapist in Utah, she's having a retreat on April 20th in Ogden, I think. I'll be speaking at that. There's also links down below. All right. So Faith, back to you. Tell me, how do you like sex?
How do I like it? Oh,
I just don't know where to jump off in. How did you grow into the woman that is before us today?
If I'm completely honest, I always had a lot of curiosity about sex, even when I was terrified of it. Even when I feared sex, I always had a lot of interest and a lot of curiosity about it. I always had a really strong sex desire, but I was really good at reining in and knowing my boundaries. I was very good at keeping my sex caged and not asking deeper questions about my own desires and about my own identity.
Did you experiment whatsoever, like in your Mormon youth or like pre-marriage or anything? Like, did you look at anything erotic or masturbate or was it just like, I'm curious, but I'm fearful.
Erotic things, the most erotic things that I had seen was probably Top Gun. I was like, huh, I'm aware I like boys. Pretty Woman was like way erotic. Yeah, that was probably the extent. There's literally like nothing else that stands out. I was very good at not looking at things. When there was talk of a magazine down by the river, I was like, oh, that's horrible. I was really good at fearing it. I was really good at holding that line. So no, there was no experimentation. There was, even in high school, the most I ever did was kiss a boy, and only one. And then in college, I kissed one more boy before I met my husband. And I was that girl that would be having deeply intellectual and existential conversations with boys about why I didn't want to make out with them. And they're like, why don't you just want to make out just for fun? And I was like, because there's a lot of feelings and passions and emotions that are attached to making out. And I can't connect with you at that level because we've only been on 3 dates. Mm-hmm. So I've always been very guarded when it comes to sexuality. So I can 110% say, even masturbating is, and like just being comfortable touching myself, I didn't feel comfortable even touching myself in front of Brett until several years in front of our marriage, into our marriage. And
Brett is the gas station attendant. No, yes, he's always your husband. Yes. Yes,
That is my husband.
I have the jokes.
15 years.
Yeah.
Coming in August.
Yeah. So. Because that is part of Mormonism too, is like, you know, your sexuality is kind of owned by your spouse. You only express it with them. And so you're saying that you didn't feel comfortable like expressing any kind of sexuality that felt like solo in front of him.
Yeah.
That's what I heard you say.
Yeah. It was embarrassing. It felt shameful. It was honestly just because I had never done it. I honestly thought I would look stupid too. I didn't know like what noises I could or couldn't make. I had never seen it. I had no perception of it. And I was fearful of him seeing me that vulnerable. Yeah, definitely. No, the most in-depth sexual conversation I had about sex before actually getting married was one of my roommates was getting a divorce and explained to us how sex works. And I remember being like, he put what, where? I'm like a 19-year-old woman. I had no idea. My sex ed in school was like, this is a girl and this is a boy. And eventually they have sex, but you don't have sex because we use contraception. Like, abstinence was my sex talk. And so I went in with a lot of question marks. So yeah, my husband defined sex for me right out of the gate. And that's not necessarily on him. That's not like something he had to control, because that was something that I had put in place for myself because I was a rule follower. And I was totally fine with giving him that power because that was what I understood. Mm-hmm. That was what everyone did. And so that was what I should do.
When you start from a vantage point of everything that you kind of just mentioned, seems like there's just a lot of hurdles to overcome to just be a more like truly embodied type of person where sexuality is part of that. And so as you deconstructed Mormonism, what kind of emphasis did you put on like making sure that like, I want to have this true connection with my husband. I want to be able to have this embodied self. Like, how did you go about?
So I think that work. I actually need to go back to how I said I didn't struggle with a lack of sexual desire. I struggled with the confidence to have sexual desire. I think there's also a piece of it where we were both playing roles when it comes to like a patriarchal view of society. I know this is something that gets so over talked about, but I was very in that role of wife, submissive, know your place. And I only put him in that place of, we have sex when you want it, how you want it. I didn't know how to ask for anything different because I didn't know what pleasured me. I didn't feel that I had permission to go after those things and seek after those things. Even using the verbiage now is so silly to me because I'm like, oh, well, I couldn't decide because I couldn't look at anything. I always could because it was always mine, but I chose to follow the letter of the law so magnified that I needed to be perfect in my sex. So I want to first address the question of how do I get myself to like it? And I think you need to ask yourself, is it really that you don't like it, or is it because you hold shame there? Is it really that you don't have a desire for it? Like, is it a physiological lack of desire? Or is it because you are not asking yourself enough questions about your own sexuality in order to get yourself to a place where you feel confident in exploring in that way, in exploring in an intimate way with yourself or with a partner? So I think for me, it was probably about 6 or 7 months after I was able to really stand in my light and stand in my power and know that in order to experience the fullness of this world around me, I need to go through and re-answer the questions that I have already established expectations and perceptions of. So I had to go through and I had to pull apart, okay, what do I think politically and why? How do I feel about the ways that I'm supposed to feel? And how do I feel about the ways that I really feel from a humanity perspective politically? How do I feel about religion? How do I feel about the good that it brings? And how do I feel about the possible negative pieces that come from it? How do I want to experience religion? And how do I want to teach my children about it? But I was dancing around sex. And then even talking about sex, it felt so selfish because sex was always viewed as something that is a selfish or a dark or a dirty thing to that extent. If it wasn't within the bonds of a sacred desire to procreate or a sacred desire to share love, then it was dangerous and scary. And so I needed to figure out what that line of dangerous and scary and righteous desire was. Mm-hmm. And so in order to do that, there was so much that got lost in translation that my ADHD brain was just so good at just staying, okay, well, this is good and pure because it's what he wants to do. And so I had to just completely torpedo the whole thing, torpedo my whole understanding of sex. And I had to say, okay, I need to move forward in this conversation with sex, but in order to move forward, I need to figure out how I feel at my core about humanity because sex affects us in every way. So then I figured out this morality piece I talked about in the last episode about how the number one thing in any of my considerations of sex has to be consent. That's my first stance. Then safety. How do you keep everyone safe? Safe word, whatever. And then agreements. So my agreements with myself and my agreements with my spouse. The reason why I say safety before agreement is just because regardless of any situation, anything that I'm viewing, even if I am viewing some sort of erotica, like I want to know that it came from a safe place. I don't want to know that anybody was hurt or under duress or like none of that is attractive to me at all. And from a humane perspective, if everything that I'm doing in this life from point 30 at age 30, when I decided, no, I'm only going to move forward in the most authentic way possible, I only wanted everything to reflect, how do I make a safe community for my kids to grow up in? How do I create a story that is one that is inclusive, one that is full of love, and one that is full of the fewest amount of victims and pain? Mm-hmm.
So, can I interject one thing?
Of course.
So from your perspective as somebody who had such like a scrupulous background of following right and wrong, like if the question is, you know, how do we like sex better? If you feel like you're bad at something, you're not going to want to do it anymore. You know, yeah, like if you feel like not just the shame that's attached to it, but like if you want to be able to show up in a way where you're like, oh, okay, there's a lot of things I need to consider. How do you, you know, encourage somebody to hold space and grace for themselves that, you know, this is just Faith Erickson's way of conceptualizing this journey, but how do you like advise someone to not have to take such a big bite all at once, and what small pieces can they just start with?
You start with your agreements with yourself. So like in those like 4-step agreements, you start with, okay, there's consent, there's safety. Now, what are my agreements with myself? If you can't clearly answer that with what your boundaries are and are not, then you don't know your own sex identity and it's not time to introduce the partner yet. So even in my sex experience, yes, I had unwelcome sexual experiences that I did not ask for. And that definitely informed my sex experience. So I needed to back up way before that, way before I had a partner that I was having sex with. And I wanted to figure out just my sex identity. Mm-hmm. So in order to do that, I had to come to my agreements for myself. And honestly, we just went through, I didn't have self-confidence. I didn't love myself. I didn't view my body as sexually attractive. So why would I view my body as a piece of desire or passion, or when I didn't think very much of myself?
I want to dissect a little bit of like the framework that you were talking about when you called it your morality piece. I think that's really interesting. We come from this system that our morality piece is pretty much given to us consciously, subconsciously, whatever it is. When we go to friends, when we look to church leaders, from our bishops and things, the morality of how to have the spirit, how to be with your family forever, all of that is very concrete. And so the idea of taking that authority back and having your own morality piece and the ways that you kind of constructed it is so interesting. So I'd like to dive into like the definitions and expand on a little bit more of what you're talking about and how you have carved out that safe space. And I know we're going to go into this more in depth in the second interview that we're going to do, but a couple words that stood out to me is, one, I like to talk about perceptions and so much of, you know, why sex is hard to talk about, and this authority and this fear, I personally believe has a lot to do with our perceptions that were put into our heads and then believing those perceptions. So it's, if you're saying to yourself, like, I am unconfident, you're confident in your lack of confidence, you are trusting in this lack of trust, right? And like expanding your ideas about, you know, not just what sexuality is, but how you show up holistically as a person. It's kind of how I would put it. So perceptions, I think, are really important things to kind of challenge when looking at this morality piece that's kind of been given to us. So what, if you have anything to speak on around like perceptions that you had about the whys, the hows of what you're supposed to do to show up, and how you would like advise someone to, you know, question those perceptions when things just kind of seem so concrete in a black and white outsourced authority kind of way.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause all sexuality scared me, but when it was defined for me, it was sex between a man and a woman. Anything else is basically violence. It's just bad and icky. So love between a man and a man, love between a woman and a woman was dangerous because it was an off-limits thing. And so looking at perceptions, having Schitt's Creek to watch David and, is it Noah? I can't remember his name. They fall in love. I mean, being able to have that conversation with my husband about two men falling in love and him being emotional and being like, I just loved that story. I thought it was such a beautiful story that they just belonged together. They just went so well together. And I think seeing his perception evolve has been really beautiful for me. Yeah. Cool. I feel like seeing Brett's perception of sexuality has been attractive to me in him. It's a matter of the morality piece. If everyone is consenting, if everyone is the proper age, if no one's being hurt, and there is love and positivity and growth that can happen within humanity, is it not something that we could all benefit from? Coming back to this whole, like, let's build bridges, let's find compromises, being able to see each other's humanity means to see them at a deeper level. And if we're all being really honest, the deep level of humanity that we never want to talk about, the actual black and white of it, but I mean, it's a rainbow, quite literally. Instead of actually talking about it, we just find ways to build laws and shaming and keep it quiet politically. So then there's this marketplace of people who are trying to give perceptions through TV, through film, through movies of healthy, functioning, wonderful relationships, because it's not the violent, no, terrible that many of us had it fed to us, that we were given the perception growing up. So then even seeing myself as a woman who enjoys sex. Okay, so this is a good story. So anytime sex was discussed in circles of women, when I was in a more believing state, I guess, anytime it was discussed, it was, oh, I'd be fine if I never had to again. And like, that's not something, and like, I would never wear a thong in front of my husband because, oh, he would just attack me. And I always found myself with a lot of queries where I'm like, I thought that we were, so does no one here like sex? Am I the only one that likes sex? So then that added a lot of shame to my own perspective, because many of the circles I was in, sex was always talked down on. Mm-hmm. So the fact that I had a high sexual desire made me feel like I was dangerous, made me feel like I was like, oh no, there's something wrong with me, because all of these women are talking about how they could go the rest of their life. They could go a year without it. And then I'm like, is that really how they feel? Or is that like a virtue signal? Are we all pretending right. we don't like it? So then here I am in girl world again, trying to actually define what people are saying when I'm only wanting to give the perception of genuine openness. I don't mm-hmm. want to play the games. I don't want to pretend that I don't like it so you think that I'm better because I don't like things that we do enjoy. It was a very confusing thing for me. So giving off the perception of I'm very modest. I speak when spoken to. I love my husband, and I've always loved my husband. We've always been so deeply connected, but the way my brain works, I need this wide range of just ideas and interest levels. And I love when I need advice to be able to go to multiple perspectives and multiple people who I respect. And so, again, based on perception, I wouldn't be close friends with a member of the opposite sex. And I wasn't close friends with anyone who was gay because they were dangerous and I couldn't be dangerous. So it's interesting because my life now, I'm starting a podcast with my buddy called Too Hasty. And we were thinking the way, because it's going to be just a funny one, but we wanted to talk about like the importance of friendships, adult friendships that are not your spouse, but that we all benefit from having big groups of close friends that you can have really meaningful conversations with. And why does that matter? And that nobody needs to be having sex. Nobody needs to be starting these rumors about people having sex just because they're friends with the opposite sex, because sex doesn't have to be the whole thing. That doesn't have to be what everybody is constantly seeking after either. I feel like when you are more comfortable talking about it, it's so much easier to just swim in the world and know that I'm super confident in my sexuality. I know exactly where I lie. I know exactly where my friends lie. We're all very comfortable because none of us fear it. Mm-hmm. And I think that that was probably that biggest hurdle that I had to, like Lara Croft, Tomb Raider, the video game. Mm-hmm. Had to just get right over is the fear of sex. And the only way to get over the fear of sex was to educate myself on it. And so when I started educating myself on it and I established that there would be no new prophets and that I would be the only authority on it, I allowed myself to start asking the questions that I had kept closed. Like I had all these boxes on the shelf about like, ooh, I wonder about that or I wonder about that. And when I watched that movie, I was tingly, but I don't want to ask any more questions about that. And I was kind of able to, once I had established, okay, I'm okay. I'm okay with myself. I'm okay with myself sexually. I talked a lot on the Mormon Stories episode about kind of establishing my own sexuality and establishing my own sexual identity and getting really comfortable with that spectrum of sexuality. Because again, within this perception, I was told like, very, very clear instruction about the rainbow, that there is only blue and pink and everything else is a joke. And so when I was establishing my own definition of sexuality and expression of sexuality, and it was very refreshing to be able to have my mind expanded to ask myself those questions about myself, about why have I always been closer with guys? Why is it so hard for me to connect with women? But at the same time, my personality is to be fiercely defensive of women, to protect women, to make sure that we all are aware of our power and we're mm-hmm. all standing in our power. Those are interesting questions to ask. The way that I express myself physically, I definitely have more of a loud expression of self. I don't know how you describe that. And even being honest with myself about what features are attractive to me in men, in women, and not having or holding any shame associated mm-hmm. with that was really healthy. I think within my own sexual definition, once I was able to get more comfortable within my own identity, because I think that's the whole reason why it's so hard to talk about sex is because it's so vulnerable. Because when it comes to who I am as a person, the personality that I'm able to exude and express is fully informed by my confidence in the most vulnerable pieces of myself mm-hmm. and in being able to connect with myself. And I don't fear any parts of my sexual identity because I don't shame any parts of my sexual identity. Any of the things that I'm attracted to, any of the things that interest me. Yeah, I think that in giving perceptions of purity, we're eluding way more fear when we give more perceptions of we're just humans. We're all just humans. Yeah. We all have nuance within us. I think that breeds a lot more confidence, a lot more comfort. So I had to start there. So for me, I started with giving myself permission to go have some professional boudoir photography taken. And I went to my friend Lindy, and this was actually in February of 2020. This was before the whole world like stood still for a minute. Year. I had the boudoir pictures taken. I gifted them to my husband. And then even in that, we had that realization that the way that he viewed me was so starkly different than the way that I viewed myself. And then in viewing the photos, me seeing them from someone else's vantage point, because we so often just look in the mirror at our faces and look in the mirror of our, how often are we looking at the mirror when we're laughing and we're telling the best part of the joke or the juiciest part of this dirty story? Or how often are we actually experiencing the way we are experienced by other people? Never. You're doing makeup and doing whatever. And so when I was actually able to see a different perspective of myself through the boudoir photography, I was like, okay, maybe I'm not like a little green troll. Maybe I'm like, mm-hmm. I'm okay.
I've seen him. You look great.
But I had to, but I had to force myself to look. I had to have someone say, no, look at her. No, she is pretty great. But then I was like, I'm still forcing myself to listen to you saying I'm great. I'm still forcing myself to listen to my husband saying, no, you're beautiful. These are you. This is how I see you. And so then I had to go back even further to what is so wrong with me? And why do I feel like it's so bad? Why do I feel like I'm so gross? So then I had to go into even our cultural perception of beautiful, of sexy, of the different body types that we see, and why I needed to look like this, why I needed to look like that. What did I find attractive? Because when you're taking everything out, you're also taking out of only man, only woman, right? I gave myself permission to say, no, I mean, like, I think her body is beautiful. Like, there is sexual desire for her body. Do I want to have sex with her? Definitely not. But I think that that is really cool. So what about that body do I like about my body? And then having this realization and me even comparing my body to her body feels so silly because it's the only body I have. Mm-hmm. So I'm just going to live full out in this body. So then when I was able to kind of establish, okay, no, you need to stop seeing yourself through everyone else's lens. Mm-hmm. You need to stop seeing yourself through what might they think. You need to stop holding shame for your body, period. Stop trying to hide it all the time. So then there was this like, oh, but if I stop hiding it, is it because I'm narcissistic? Because everyone's going to think that I think that I'm super hot. And then I was like, shit. Again, I'm letting all my behaviors be dictated by what other people might think.
Yeah.
So then I had to take it back again. And I was like, no, these boudoir photos that I took are beautiful. Is my body perfect? It's definitely not. But maybe if me, Jane, plain Jane over here posts some pictures that I'm proud of. And I say, hey, I'm proud of these. You should take some pictures you're proud of too. I might give permission to one other woman that's in the same position that I'm in, that doesn't see herself for the extra goddess that she is. And she just needs that little nudge of, well, she's no one. And she went and took photos and she looks beautiful. I want to have that experience too. So then that was so much fun. So then I got into sexy dancing. That was always something that I would shame other women for. Like, oh, she's just dancing like that because she wants attention. And oh, well, I hope you're not looking at there, because over there she's dancing sexy. And then I had to ask myself, why is that intimidating to me? Why am I scared of someone who is dancing sexy, of another beautiful woman? Why is that scary? Why do I need to shame that? And so then through a very long course of time, I started getting on the dance floor and not even having a second thought about who was watching and why, and just dancing for the sake of dancing and living in my body and laughing and smiling and making eye contact with my friends and then wiggling with them and like really just being in my body and feeling in my body felt so empowering and felt so sexy because I wasn't thinking about anybody else on the dance floor. So I went from going to little fitness classes and not wanting another person to look at me. I would be in the back row and I hated when the instructor would come by me because maybe someone might look at me, to teaching the classes now, right, where I have this completely different level of self-confidence because I've allowed myself to ask those internal questions about why. Why do I feel this way? Why do I have this building block for me with my body? So then I started taking burlesque style dance classes and sexy dance classes. And then I was like, I love the power that I feel. I love moving in my hips and I love the loud music and I love what this does in me. It makes me feel confidence and fiery in a way that I haven't experienced before, or I haven't let myself have permission to experience before. So then I invited a bunch of my girlfriends and I had like a big night where all of us went and I hired one of my burlesque dancing friends to come and teach us. And it was so much fun. And it was so much fun for all of us to have that experience together of just really living in our skin and really looking at ourselves in a mirror while we're dancing sexy, while you're gyrating and your hips are moving and your butt's flapping and saying, I'm so cute. I'm so proud of myself. I'm brave. I'm brave because I'm here. And I love all of these women who are also brave because we're having this really excellent experience together. Mm-hmm. And I loved that. I loved that I was able to have that experience and then I was able to bring other people along on the journey. Mm-hmm. And then my friend Jenna owns a company, Voltage Lingerie, and she asked me if I wanted to walk in her lingerie show. And I definitely had a pause of like, oh, a lingerie show, like there's nowhere to hide. Like at least in a picture, like you can pose in a certain way, but it's frozen. Like people will just see that. But then I'm like, if I'm dancing on a dance floor, there's nowhere to hide. And I'm not thinking about anyone then. So why would I think about anybody in a lingerie show? If I'm being asked to do this, I'm really excited for this opportunity of pushing myself outside of those boundaries that kept me small, that kept me scared. Mm-hmm. Because anytime in this sex conversation, I felt fear, I had to ask, why do I feel this way? Where is this fear coming from? Where is it stemming from? So then I did that first lingerie show and it was so much fun. And not only would I scream and cheer on all the other women and men that were walking in the show, but to be able to have that assurance of everyone screaming and yelling for you, walking down that catwalk, doing your dance, back out.
Love that.
It was deeply healing for me. It was something that I hadn't been able to obtain through doing the boudoir photography. I hadn't been able to obtain even in my own experiences just with myself, but just that freedom of, yeah, I'm walking on a catwalk in my underwear and I am not feeling shame. So it was so much fun. And then I decided, take it to the next level because it's me. So every hike we went on, we do Peaks of the Peak. So I always go topless. My friends are all aware. It's something we laugh about. But there's something about that skin to wild feeling of I hold no shame. There is no shame in my being. And because of that, I am the lightest version of myself. I am the happiest version of myself.
Lightest.
The most whole.
Yeah.
Because I'm no longer carrying weight that was never mine to carry. That's probably one of the third things that I say to people who are experiencing frustration in their belief system. Let go of the things that are not yours to carry. Because especially women, we're expected to carry so much quietly. Just do it. Keep your head down. Get it done. But there's so much that we were not supposed to carry, and that we need to give ourselves permission to unload, and that we need to allow others the responsibility to hold for themselves. Mm-hmm. Those can be really hard conversations, but they're necessary in order to get to that whole healed place. Mm-hmm. In this process, my conversations with my husband are definitely evolving and changing. Our sex experience with each other is evolving and changing. My ability to show up in the world is definitely different. Like, because our sex identity and because our personal identity is so intertwined, as I gain confidence in the things about myself that I'm most loathed or that I felt most discomfort with, I gained more confidence with everything in the world. And so then I found myself, even in the jobs that I was doing, how much of this am I doing because I love it? And how much am I doing because I want other people to look at me and mm-hmm. see the accolades and see all of how much am I doing to please other people? And how much am I missing out with my own children, with my own family, with my own experience? Because I'm trying so hard to put off this perception for everyone else's benefit and no longer my own.
Yeah.
So then totally go through a rough patch personally, but none of it having to do with necessarily like my path of looking into sex and stuff, but everything having to do with, because my internal humanity is coming to the surface.
Right.
There's so many avatars that I was playing and so many parts that I was playing that was not genuine to myself.
Right.
Even to the point where Brett and I were playing roles that were not genuine to who we are and to who we need to be in order to make our relationship work.
And may I just add, if Natasha Helfer was here, who I am doing a retreat with for Reclaiming Sexuality, April 20th, she always brings up that Emily Nagoski quote about pleasure is the measure, and how, where is there room to experience like your pleasure and what you like, and what actually would make you, you know, want to have sex, when all of those things are kind of going on. You're not in this fully embodied state. So it's like, where is there room for that pleasure? So it's like, you have to carve out that space and be committed to being really radically honest about a lot of the things that we've been talking about, to carve out that space, be open to it. And then like that can actually be filled with the sense of pleasure that's always kind of been down there, depending on who you are and what you enjoy, what extremes to what, you know, whatever perceptions that you have grown up with. But like, there's something there to everybody.
Yes.
And once you kind of carve out that space, it's going to be able to be filled with something. And it's a benefit of this journey that we go through, is just picking up more aspects of ourselves to feel more embodied.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. I think that in my self journey, so while those physical things are happening, there's this internal piece of me that's also fearing like erotic things, like erotic movies, erotic, like I have a lot of shame and a lot of fear for that. So then there were things that I needed to see and experience, but that I still wasn't ready to watch with Brett. So I had to have the confidence and the trust in him that I could say, hey, I want to watch this and this and this. And he's like, cool, let's watch it. And I said, no, I want to watch it by myself because I'm too embarrassed to watch with you. Mm-hmm. And him giving me the space, okay, that makes sense, go do it. And then me being able to sit in my bed and laugh out loud because I'm like, oh my gosh, this is making me feel so embarrassed. But why is it making me feel embarrassed? Because I've had all these experiences where people said, oh, this will happen and this will happen and X, Y, and Z makes you so bad. And so I had to ask myself why I had shame or why I was scared. But laughing out loud by myself, allowing myself some grace, was really healthy to have just kind of that like, no, this is my experience. This is my sexual experience. And being able to separate my sexual identity from my husband's, I think was probably the healthiest thing that has ever happened in our relationship for me to be able to take that back and to own that. Because now when we have sex, it is transformative because I am bringing something to the table. I'm not keeping every single part of me completely silent from that perspective.
Yeah. And I know I can think of like my Mormon Orthodox brain is like, that sounds really scary because you don't want to disconnect. It sounds like you're trying to disconnect. But like, I think you put it beautifully. And in my own words, I would say like, I'm going to learn things on my own. I'm going to have chambers in my brain that I won't be able to access if you're here.
Yes.
Yeah. And I'm like, I will bring them back. Exactly. I am a forager. I will bring back the nuts and berries to share with the tribe. Just give me some space here.
To have that experience, to have that vulnerable experience with yourself. Because when you do bring it back and you say, okay, so I was thinking maybe da-da-da-da-da-da, there's so much more expansion. There's so much more connection and growth that can come from that. But I do have to say that with mine and Brett's relationship, because we were so informed and we were put in these roles patriarchally of, okay, your wife, you do this, this, and this. Your husband, you do this, this, and this. Your husband and you communicate in this way. Your wife and you communicate in this way. Female and male, like I feel like we're kind of given roles like housework and garage work, and like we're given so many different roles. But then when I was having this experience, I was able to be informed by our friends who are men and our friends who are women that are in relationships with each other, because they had to define those roles for themselves. They had to decide, this is what I bring to the relationship here. This is how I want to show up here. And for them to give that permission to each other, I had that realization of why are we pushing ourselves into these holes? We're both very intelligent human beings. We can make this work for us in a healthier, more expansive way. And I think that that has actually really informed our sexual language together too.
Yeah. Love all of that. And one other thing that I would just love to add and get your thoughts on, questions from my Instagram. And when people were asking, like, I don't like sex. I've never enjoyed it. I've only been with my husband. How do I actually like it? And I know that you and I were going to kind of be taking such a expand, like a 10,000 foot view on a lot of these questions. But kind of going straight into like the frameworks that I look back at that I wish I could have like told my younger self. On my Instagram last night, I wrote how to, you know, discover and discuss what actually feels good. We've talked about like, talk about your boundaries openly, that morality piece and what your boundaries are and what your fantasies are, and be able to carve out a space where you can discuss those openly. But then also when you discuss what actually feels good, because it's different for everyone, and that pleasure is the measure, as they say, and that you get to decide how to perceive you and experience all life has. I feel like that's, again, a lot of the things that we're talking about today is not putting the authority that you got from the church or from your husband or for what other people say or how you'll be judged, but, you know, questioning all of those perceptions and how you actually want to experience life. And then the other one that is huge for me is the idea about, yeah, things being not linear and not having a point A to point B to point O, and that it's a journey, not a destination to be on. And to me, that just means that there's grace upon grace upon grace. And it's not about your perception of what good sex is that somebody else told you. It's about the journey that you take yourself on. You know, when you're talking about kind of like how you and Brett show up and the gender expectations, so much of sex obviously has the emotional journey, the connectivity. And then there's like the kink aspects of it, the dom, the sub, the love languages. And all of this to me is like learning a new alphabet that your sexual identity and expression feels most comfortable in, and that hopefully can match up with the person that you're expressing that with.
Yeah.
All the consent in the world. Like I would not, when I was Mormon, I would not have known how expansive all the different aspects are of like touching the cosmos, basically. All the, like we talked about like canna sex and stuff.
Yeah.
I would not have known that language. And so to somebody who, that's a foreign language, it's a foreign concept to them, like what advice do you have to give people that, you know, that is out there and the confidence to actually explore it, because there's so many things in that that you will probably find out that you like that you didn't think you would like.
I think that the best way to open that conversation is through educating yourself on the things. So do some homework on your own first about why it is that it's attractive to you, why it is that you have questions about some of those things. I think you need to be kind of self-led in that. But if you're like me and had no frame of reference of what you may or may not be interested in, I actually found it really beneficial to watch like some sex documentaries, to read some sex books. I really liked Come As You Are. The Principles of Pleasure on Netflix was really good. I think the only way to know when to open up those conversations with each other is to know what options are out there. And so you do have to open yourself up to seeing those things. And then you just have to ask yourself those questions. Like, do I like the power thing? Do I like to be the one in power? Do I like to be the submissive one? Do I like to be, do I like to role play? Do I love the fantasy of it? Do I love toys or do I hate toys? The only way to do that is to give yourself grace, to know that everybody is fallible. Everybody's going to have weaknesses. Everybody's going to have ways that they don't show up 100%. Everybody's going to have different talents, and you're going to be able to develop that over time. There were a lot of ways that I felt super insecure sexually just because I didn't know. I even when it comes to pleasuring my husband, I don't have the same parts. And so there's things that I'm like, is this hurting you? Is this, that's not sexy the whole time to be like, does this hurt? Is this okay? Do you like this? Like it was just such a stressful thing in my head. And so I think give yourself grace, be playful, have fun with it. I think stop letting it be so serious. Stop letting sex hold so much power. Yes, it's super important. Yes, it affects us in every way, but it's really not that serious. And we all can take part in it in so many different ways. So when I say give yourself grace, stop trying to define it as good or bad sex. Define it as your sex, mm-hmm. and his sex and your pleasure. And if it's defined as your pleasure, as long as no one's getting hurt, then that opens up a lot of different opportunities. But yes, we've talked about a little bit of cannabis definitely helps as far as ability to stretch and expand your interest with it. However, I also don't think that sex is something that should be forced. I think that it should come in its own time. So if it's really something that you are uncomfortable with experiencing with your partner, mm-hmm. there's way more questions that need to be asked there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a big question from a lot of men that I got to is like, you know, how do I make my wife want it? And I'm like answering my DMs last night. And I'm like, there's nothing you can't make anyone want anything.
I really love that question of how do I make my wife want it? I can honestly say it's all foreplay, and foreplay is all day long.
Yeah.
The way that, and I mean, obviously I'm just saying for my own self, I know there's asexual, bisexual, like there's so many different types of ways that people like to enjoy sex. But for me, foreplay is all day. If we've just had a really rough time with the kids, it's super hard for me to mentally shift into like, oh, okay, let's be sexy now, because I'm super frustrated about my parenting skills. I don't want to make it sound like a lot of work, but when you are always kind of fostering this like sexy safe place between you, that it's almost like this energy that you toss between you throughout the day,
totally.
Of respect and love and playfulness and spicy flirtation. Like, I love to flirt. I think that is a huge part of our sex language too. So if you want your wife to want to, or your partner or your husband, hear them out. We're telling each other how we want to be loved. We're telling each other how we want to be connected. So listen. And then when you're listening, play out that, like, show up in those ways that we're asking. A lot of us don't need much. We just need to be told that, hey, we're looking really, really good that day, and a slap on the butt, and just like little check-ins, I think are extremely sexy. From like a, we're married, it's how is this, how are we going to keep the spice alive? by keeping it alive, by mm-hmm. putting in the effort to make sure that they know that you love them and that mm-hmm. you are all about them. I love to flirt with my husband in public, unashamed of other people around, because not only am I not ashamed of being in love with my husband, but I hope it gives other people permission to be more expressive with mm-hmm. flirting with their significant other, because that is sexy. That is the fun and the thrill mm-hmm. of sex.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I really admire you and Brett's like relationship for that. Like whenever we're out at a party on a dance floor or something, you guys should see Faith and Brett. Just like, I can always count on you guys to just like bring such adorable chemistry of flirtation of like, those two people are in love. Look at them dance. And I don't know if Brett even likes to dance, but he's great at it, because I think he has to keep up with you. So
he is actually so funny. He's also, he was always been a good dancer, but he would get really in his head about dancing, and he would always like close his eyes, and he would only dance mm-hmm. if we were dancing right next to each other. But there was one specific night that we went out dancing, and I don't know what it was about it, but he was like, I don't want to be embarrassed about dancing anymore. I love dancing. I love dancing with our friends. Mm-hmm. I love to dance with you. I love it. And I'm really done feeling shame about it, mm-hmm. because there's so many things that we throw out in the world and so many assumptions that we place on people, because, oh, he likes dancing. What does that say? Or, oh, they like this. What does that say? There's so many things that we place on people that, again, are never theirs to hold. And so when he was able to let all of that go, his ability to dance with me in public and mm-hmm. to connect has been, yeah.
Love that. Good. We are going to have to do another episode sometime, because I personally, I mean, I know a lot of this stuff and we share a lot of the same opinions, and you've honestly helped me a lot, especially going back to that Mormon Stories episode that you did with John and Margie back in 2022. But I feel another episode coming on like, the question is like, how do I like and want sex? The other question would be like, how do I get my husband to like and want dancing? That's the one piece that's missing. That's it.
Well, I could probably give some pointers now. I think that when Brett started going to fitness classes with me and started realizing that everybody is just doing the best they can, everybody's just showing up and everybody's just wiggling their body and having fun because it feels really good to move our bodies. That was a big eye-opening piece for him. Honestly, hanging out with friends that dance unashamed is a huge door opener too, especially for men to see other men feeling really strong and feeling really secure in dancing is really beautiful to see. Mm-hmm. It makes me super, super happy.
Yeah. And I love when I see my husband just trying new things and getting out of his comfort zone. And just anytime I watch somebody like grow and be curious about other people, about myself, about themselves, like that in and of itself is really attractive.
Yes.
And so it doesn't have to be dance, just anything. So this whole post-Mormon journey of marriage and redefining like what it really means to you outside of this eternal sealed commitment and stuff, it's really scary, but there's just so many new expansive ways to learn how to love each other outside of gender roles and stuff. And it's attractive to watch your spouse grow and then be proud of you and watch you grow. So,
and it's totally different staying in the marriage, not because you're fearful that they will leave.
Right.
But both of you staying in the marriage because it's where you so desperately want to be. And I say so desperately, meaning because you know that together you make each other better than you would apart. You know that together you have so many more loving, connecting, expanding experiences. Together, you are moving further in life professionally and in within the community, that because together you are a stronger entity, you choose that. It's different than feeling like, oh, but I've got him caged in. He made a promise to me. But the fact that we wake up every morning falling more and more madly in love because we choose it.
Yeah, girl. What was the tattoo again that you got? Do you want to talk about it?
I have a tattoo on my side. I don't know if I'm not. Let's
see. There we go. There we go. All right. Tell me about the tattoo.
It says, in the end, wherever we land, I want my star next to yours. And that was my husband and I did a mushroom trip a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And he had a very turbulent experience. And I had a very coming home to reality experience, mm-hmm. I think is a good way to describe it. I felt very connected with nature, very connected with him. I went into that experience with a lot of fear, with a lot of animosity, with a lot of, I really need this sex piece to be figured out because it's such a stopgap for me. I feel like it's holding me back in so many ways because I have so much fear about it. And then coming out on the other side of that, after having that experience with him and knowing that our attractions to each other are such a minute thing when the bigger conversation is who is being loved, who is being protected, who is being cared for. Are we creating a better world? Because if we are just loving each other and protecting each other and helping each other along, these are the types of tribes that thrive. These are the types of tribes that I want to raise my kids in. If it is a culture based off of shame and pushing everyone in whatever box that we as a culture expect, then it's going to be one that is going to be met with ridicule and fighting and chaos. And so when I look at my husband, yes, I love him and I love his personality and I love his physical body, but I know that his soul is one that I am drawn to. It feels like a chemical draw that I feel so deeply close to him, and talking about like believing in love, believing in humanity, believing that, you know what, I just want to float in the same place that you are. I just want to be in the same space that you are because I adore you so deeply. So yes, if all of this journey is a need for us to want to connect, for us to want to belong with one another, and my deepest connection that I can experience with you is an intimate connection of sex, yes, I want to experience that with you. But more than that, I want to experience years and years and years and thousands of years to come of just being in your same area. So the tattoo says, in the end, wherever we land, I want my star next to yours, giving complete power to the universe in knowing that I can't tell you what's going to happen tomorrow, but I can tell you that I can love you fiercely today. I can protect you today. I can intimately connect with you and pleasure you and enjoy this life with you. But my hope is that, sure, maybe when we die, our stars will be next to each other.
Well, I'm feeling non-sexual tingles all over my body right now. And you should write that down for when you renew your vows, because that was really beautiful. And thank you so much for sharing your heart, your journey. It's not an easy thing to do. You're brave, beautiful inside and out. Love you to death. Thank you so much for sharing all this. And hope that people follow you. Give Faith some love. Leave a comment saying how much you appreciate her vulnerability and openness and expressing these things. And if you benefited or you have any additional comments to leave, I would love to read every single one of them if I can. Everybody within the sound of my voice, now you all know that I have this epic, amazing group trip to Greece. So if it's within your budget and you can make it happen, please look into it. The itinerary, it's going to be fantastic. A couple days in Athens, a couple days in Santorini. I want to get us a yacht for the fifth day. So the more people that sign up, the bigger the boat can be. So if you want to make new friends and it's within your means, please look into the links below and sign up to come on my Greece trip, August 26th through September 1st, 7 days. I am a smarter, wiser woman for having you in my life. Thank you so much.
Thank Faith you so much for coming.
Has to run and go teach a fitness class right now.
That's right.
So thank you for your time. And if people want to reach you or, you know, follow you on social media, do you have any handles you want to drop?
I do want to make sure that I'm creating safe spaces and safe places. So I do have an Instagram, Faith Ironically, but a lot of that is going to be a lot of big ideas, big questions, a lot of my fitness schedules, because I'm a fitness instructor. So that's more of my like more professional account, but also a lifestyle account. I have an account called Sex Beyond Religion, where that is actually going to be the piece where I discuss kind of all of these things, just because since we do have so many people that reach out to us and wanted a little bit more of a boost, I decided to put together a project where I'm kind of going through systematically with the very clear caveat that I'm not a sex therapist, I'm not a professional, but I do have a more niche lens talking about sex. And let's talk about it. Let's talk about our experiences with sex and how it helps us to grow, and how in redefining that we can make safer communities and safer conversations where we can all be more held. So you can find me Sex Beyond Religion on Instagram or Faith Ironically.
All right. That is it for this episode of the Mormon History Hoedown. Love you guys so much.